Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and all those I voted stickers on Susan B. Anthony's gravestone, the pantsuits worn to polling places. It was slow coming, but Election Day brought out the enthusiasm for Hillary Clinton and her potential for making history. From, it turns out, some women, Clinton got the votes of large majorities of Black and Latino women, and white college-educated women voted for her for the most part, but Trump won the majority of white women's votes overall. One of the themes that we're hearing over and over since the election is, what do we tell our daughters? And this is what Hillary Clinton herself said in her concession speech yesterday. Oh, we don't have the clip. Okay, thought we'd have the clip. So let's talk about it with Alexis Grinnell, co-founder of Pythia Public, a political and public affairs firm and frequent contributor to the Daily News, and Michelle Goldberg, Slate columnist and author of The Goddess Pose. Welcome back, Michelle and Alexis.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Thanks, Brian.
What do you make of the results? I just gave some of those results. 58%, a majority of white women voted for Trump, according to the exit polls. In fact, by 10 points, 53% to 43%. Do we have to start there?
Well, I think it's very clear that for 53% of white women, patriarchy works, and they'd prefer it over equality. And why that is a really interesting question, and we can unpack it on several levels. But if Trump wants all Muslims to take responsibility for terrorists, I guess as a white woman, I'd have to take some responsibility for all the 53% of white women who made the wrong choice. So
and
I'm sorry.
I also think that, you know, women have never really voted. I mean, women as a majority always vote Democratic, but women across the board don't vote as a block. They see themselves, you know, and to some degree rightly, as part of other identities. And so there's a lot of white women who see themselves as white and Christian before they see themselves as identifying with other women. And also, we know there's a lot of social science research to suggest that powerful women, you know, they provoke more anxiety in men, but they provoke anxiety in women as well, right? Basically every society known to man, one of the central divisions in the society is one of gender roles. And when that starts to break down and shift, it causes, you know, tremendous upheaval, tremendous panic. It's a really radical thing. It's one of the reasons why I was so hopeful on Tuesday. I mean, I really thought for a minute that, like, my daughter's life was not going to be a lesser life than my son's. And today I don't feel like that.
I think it's a really good point, though, to make that women are also people who reinforce gender roles. And that is something that we see.
Not just men.
Not just men. And women, certently in this case, who are choosing and preferring a system that advantages them in certain ways and certainly denies them equality in others, are systematically ignoring people in their gender group who would benefit from a different system, and in so doing reinforcing a universe that privileges their life.
You know, on Tuesday, I was walking around Trump Tower in the afternoon. There was, you know, supporters and protesters, and I saw there were selling stickers, or not stickers, they were selling buttons, you know, the ones you've seen before, adorable deplorables, and hot chicks vote Republican. And I think that there are a lot of women, you know, especially who see rightly what our society values in women, and kind of understand what is going to be valued in them and kind of what it's advantageous, you know, and I think this is all on a subconscious level, what it's advantageous for them to identify with. Do they want to identify with the woman who's not like those other bitchy, shrill women? Or do they want to identify with the woman who has been smeared and demeaned as unsexy, unfeminine, a ball breaker, you know, shrill, unfashionable? I mean, just every kind of demeaning stereotype about women in general has been attached to Hillary Clinton. And I understand why it's very fraught, I think, for a lot of people to see themselves in her.
I think part of what we're mourning is certainly the possibility of the realigning of those narratives. So what I would have seen in a Clinton presidency is the complete transformation of leadership, the idea that caregiving and parenthood is not incompatible with strength, the idea that being female is fundamentally not othered, and that there is a value to a person's ideas and power, regardless of their gender, if in fact they merit it. And the idea that we had, and again, this is I'm speaking from a place of grief that I think so many of us are in, and this processing is going to be a long time coming, but the idea that she was so insanely qualified and she lost to, I mean, we rejected.
And she lost to the most unqualified man.
I feel like we treated her like our mother. We undervalued her. We yelled at her. We blamed her for things she was not responsible for. And then we elected the beast we keep chained up in the basement. It's bizarre and just disconcerting beyond words.
Why do you think some of the deconstruction that you're doing right now wasn't more a part of the mainstream debate during the election campaign? From you guys it was, but I don't know. It seemed to me that it was buried in a way that it didn't have to be buried in a lot of the media, and it was more about, you know, Hillary is part of the establishment and things like that without this as an additional narrative.
I mean, it's hard for me to say. I mean, to me it seemed very present, and you know, and I actually think that it was probably very present for a lot of Trump voters. You know, I think that there was some research that was, I think it came out of the University of Michigan, and they published some of their results in the Washington Post that said, you know, sexism was more correlated with Trump's, sexism was correlated with Trump support over and above every other kind of variable. Yeah. And, you know, I think that you're seeing a lot of, you know, I've had friends, like, just this is in my own little bubble of liberal New York. I've had friends in the last couple of days being jeered by men on the street, being like, you're crying Hillary supporter. I had a friend who was 7 months pregnant that somebody started being like, oh, you're a Hillary supporter. I bet you're sad now. Right? I think that there is so –
knowing you're a woman.
Just knowing that she was a sad-looking, older woman. And, you know, I wrote a piece yesterday, you know, which started with a quote by Germaine Greer that said, you know, Germaine Greer once said, women have really no idea how much men hate them. And, you know, now we do. And I think that the sense of Hillary Clinton has been a kind of metonym for unseemly female ambition for her entire 25 years in public life. I came across this old 1996 Weekly Standard essay, 4,000-word piece called The Feminization of America that was, you know, decrying the coming matriarchy. And it both begins and ends with Hillary Clinton, who then has no political power whatsoever. Mm. And the last line is, Hillary Clinton is welcoming men to their new role as the second sex. And so I think that this narrative of kind of gender and power was very present in the election. And I just think that that is a big part of what those men who streamed to the polls were rejecting.
Jennifer in Manhattan, you're on WNYC with Michelle Goldberg and Alexis Grinnell. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling to say that, so I'm a white woman, I'm educated, and I realized too late that I did not have enough enthusiasm for Clinton for a long time, even though I've been a supporter for a long time. And I think that I, and maybe many people, were influenced by the far left, never Clinton movement. And I realized too late that in my life, all the people I knew in that area were men. And I think that they voted for Obama twice and failed to realize that Clinton's domestic policies are very similar to Obama's policies, and did not acknowledge the implicit bias that may have been at play in making their decision. And I think on the far left, we tend to think that we're immune to these kind of biases, and it's not okay. I think it may have affected this election.
Jennifer, thank you. Elizabeth in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hi, yes. So I called in because, as hard as it is, I voted for Trump. I'm college educated. I graduated from Tufts. I'm a feminist. I'm an artist. All my work is about feminine values. I wake up every day and struggle with the weight of dealing with living in a patriarchy, and I wish every day I could wake up and change that so that we could all engage in this world freely and equally without being hindered. But
with that grounding, you voted for Trump?
I know, and that's why I'm calling to say this, because the rhetoric regarding women who voted for Trump is very generalized and I think makes very overreaching comments. I, since I was very young, have not liked Hillary Clinton. I think that if women really could run, if any little girl's able to become president, then why would the first lady of a former president be our only option for the first female president?
Michelle, you both obviously want to talk to Elizabeth. Michelle, you want to go first?
I mean, I think that you have decided there are two things that you can either vote for Trump because he's sexist, or you can vote for Trump in spite of his sexism. But either way, you've done something deplorable. And that's true, I think, even if you are an educated New York liberal artist.
I would ask a question. You mentioned that since I was a little girl, I've never liked Hillary. Do you like Donald Trump?
I do not like Donald Trump, but I don't think that we've discussed enough the amount of the things that Hillary has done that have not been pro-woman.
I think that this question of likability is really central, because we know from all the data and the research that women are held to this nebulous standard of likability that we do not hold men to. What it means and what it really signifies is sort of this not maleness or not something else-ness, not on script for a woman. And to litigate how she has not appropriately lived up to the sort of ideal or even feminist ideal that you may have, I think, is so far removed from what's relevant to the best interests of women writ large and certainly this country. And that's a conversation I think is worth having in living rooms and with your friends and even in public radio. But I cannot condone it as a way in which to choose a president.
And I'm curious. I would like to know what it is that she thinks that policy-wise Donald Trump would improve upon Hillary Clinton.
We're going to end on this because our time's going to disappear. But Manhattan, Elizabeth, can you answer that in like 10 seconds?
In 10 seconds.
Policies that he's going to implement that will improve the lot of women?
God. Again, this is just a very hard topic to discuss, but it comes down to, across the board, I think Trump will do less damage than Hillary.
And I have to leave it there, except for a last word from Alexis, because I think you're bursting at the moment.
You've seen me gesticulating wildly.
Or what comes next? Forget about the caller.
What comes next? This is really makes all the work that we do more urgent. If anything, I'm getting over my grief, getting to the fight, feeling the power. And I think what we say, what we do, what we write, and how we organize in the next 4 years is going to be critical.
I mean, I think that the most important thing that we can do right now is not let this become normalized, not let ourselves hold on to every day that this is fascism and this is not okay.
To be continued. Michelle Goldberg from Slate, Alexis Grinnell, Daily News contributor, among other things. Thank you both.
Thanks, Brian.